Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And that's exactly what we're going to do here with Patty and her guest.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. This is Patty. I have an incredible show today and an incredible person in our studio. And she drove all the way from San Diego to get here this morning. So she probably left about 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe 7:30 to get here. So, yeah, quite a ways to get here. But this is really an important show, and I sent out on my social media calling all parents and people who care about our next generation. They need to listen to today's show. If you missed today's show, you obviously can get the podcast recording and the YouTube video that will be out in a couple of days. But I actually have this wonderful individual with me, Dr. Joni Connell, and she's an author, organizational consultant who works with leadership and as a youth coach, which is really fantastic. She's author of this incredible book, Flying Without a Helicopter, How to Prepare Your Young People for Work and Life, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Given today's absolutely crazy environment, we're going to talk about how do we prepare our children to be successful in work and life. She leads a company called Flexible Work Solutions, and she helps companies attract, develop, and retain top talent, but also help individuals increase their own personal success using their talent. She gives keynote speeches and hosts a radio show on building life skills for work. She earned her PhD in psychology from University of California, Berkeley, and she has a BA in engineering from Harvard. Now, I'm really impressed to have her in the studio today. So, welcome, Joni. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's so much fun to be here today. Thanks.
Oh, it's great. So, tell us about your background. We were joking about it before, about being in engineering and moving from Boston to out here. Tell us about your background and how you got here.
Well, yes, I did study engineering at Harvard. And I did that because my parents told me, in no uncertain terms, once that fourth check goes to Harvard, that's it. You're on your own that fourth year, right? So I knew that I had to find a profession after 4 years of college, and that's what seemed to work for me. And I was good at math and computers, but, you know, I moved to Silicon Valley right after that, which was wonderful, moving from the snow to the constant sunshine. But I found that it just wasn't really my passion. You know, the other people around me were working till 2 in the morning debugging circuits, but I would blast off and want to do things with people, and so I was much more interested in people.
Yeah.
And so I went back to school and studied psychology to get out of that, and have been working in leadership development ever since. And I found that the engineers that I worked with, including myself, I'm no exception to this, you know, we weren't raised and taught people skills.
Yeah.
So I wanted to help with that. So a lot of the work I started doing and I continue to do is work with technical people who need some of those people skills to be better leaders.
A lot of time what happens in a lot of companies, and this happened when I was in banking, it happens in technology, is you take your best technician or you take your best salesperson or your best technical person, and overnight you say, okay, now you're a manager, a leader, go forward and conquer. And with no leadership skills, no life skills, and so we're seeing that real void in the workplace, and as they don't know how to lead, they don't know what to do.
And they don't even want to necessarily. I find
exactly.
that, you know, they back then they started coming up with two different paths so that you don't have to go into leadership to continue progressing up the ladder, because not everybody really, like, it's not their passion either.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's just they're the square peg in the round hole, like we were talking about. So I really want to talk about this topic about how do we prepare our young people for work and life, because schools don't seem to be doing that as well as they could, and there's some things we can do, and there's some challenges there. But how do parents get in the way of their children's success?
Well, a lot of parents right now are structuring their kids. We just talked about this path, going to college and getting out there and thinking there's only one way to succeed. And so having the flexibility to think broadly and understand where the person is, where the kid is, and who they are, and helping to tailor a career around them rather than tailor the kid around a career that they think they should have. I think that's one issue. And another one is doing things for them. Right? We have a lot of parents today who are out there. And then, okay, so I have to back up a second and say, we're all in this to do the best we can for our kids, right?
Yeah.
Very rarely do we have somebody who's not trying to do that. So it's the best intentions.
Right.
But sometimes we have unanticipated consequences, right? So we go out and we want our kid to succeed. And so we go in there and we talk to the teacher for them, or we change things around and get them out of a
bad class.
Yeah, right. But then we haven't taught the kids how to do it themselves. We haven't taught them how to both, you know, succeed in a situation which isn't ideal for them, right? Because sometimes we have the bad boss, right? How to get out of a bad class, how the teacher you don't get along. Well, how are you going to learn how to do that in life later when you have somebody you're working for who you don't like? You can't just have mommy come in and, you know, pull you out.
Yeah.
Right. So we're doing things for them, and they're missing those opportunities is what it comes down to learn some of those skills.
Right. And how does this impact on girls specifically? Because we talked about this when we were the other day about how as much as parents are trying to be the modern parents and raising their girls to play soccer or piano or softball or whatever the sport or whatever it is, they're trying to teach them with good intentions to do these things, but yet somehow girls seem to be still being raised to be more perfectionists than sort of these brave risk takers. So how does it maybe impact or amplify with girls?
Well, there are a couple things going on here. One is that girls tend to internalize stress and anxiety more than boys do. Our society has caused that to happen. And so they take it out on themselves as opposed to others. And we can talk more about that, if you like, about the anxiety factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the numbers are staggering, and burnout and crisis and all of that. I'm seeing so many stories of that. One person just literally told me a couple of days ago that this one girl was high-performing, high-achiever, studying gymnastics and everything in her, and she got to college and within 5 days had a breakdown and had to be taken home.
Really?
Yes. I mean, this is not unique to her. I hear these stories all the time, and we don't always talk about this because we on Facebook, we don't say, hey, my kid just dropped out of college.
You know,
my kid's stressed out at school.
Right.
It's like, that's not what you put on
right.
Facebook.
Right,
we don't. So we don't share those real stories. We just put out there everything that looks perfect and good. So this is going on, and, you know, you asked about, like, how can we be more supportive? Well, first of all, pulling back on some of the stressors that we're putting on them,
right.
The expectations that we have of these kids to be these superheroes when they're just normal kids.
They're kids. Let them be kids.
Right.
I look at the kids around me that I know and, the kids in my life, my nieces and nephews, because my kids are much older. But I look around them and I think about, you know, here they're supposed to be, especially the girls. It seems to be more pressure on girls than boys. And I'll use an example. You know, the girls seem to have to be the A student, or if they get a B, they're in complete stress. They need to be in student leadership. They need to be playing soccer. They need to be playing lacrosse. They need to be playing tennis. They need to be doing all these things. And they're supposed to be good at all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Where if a boy isn't as good as school, and he's maybe really good in sports or good in maybe computer games or something, it's okay.
Yeah.
So there seems to be this double standard with more pressure on girls creating the stress and anxiety than there does on boys.
And it gets worse when they get older because they have to be perfect moms.
Yes.
You know, and perfect wives or, you know, attractive, beautiful people. And
happy all the time.
Right. I mean, we put so much pressure on women and girls in our society. And the idea is we have to pull back and start to understand that and let them actually, you know, have some downtime.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to worry about. I was talking with a young girl the other day, and she's been playing tennis and soccer, and she's that A student, and she's beautiful, and she's a homecoming princess, and all these beautiful things about her. And then it's like, well, now soccer's over and tennis will be over. You give yourself a break. Oh, no, I'm going to go play lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, but you've never played it before, and why? Well, all my friends are playing it, and it's kind of this peer pressure thing. So I just think about that, because you're right. But girls that are raised to be perfectionists, as they grow older, at least my theory and belief, and we can chat about this, is that perfectionist turns into the imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're trying to be the perfect mom, the perfect manager, the perfect soccer coach, you know, soccer, being involved with your kid, the perfect this, the perfect that. And there's this whole thing about, you know, the Cinderella syndrome, but Cinderella was a fairy tale.
Right.
Superwoman was a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
These people don't really exist in the real world. So how can parents help girls overcome this and even build resiliency? Because I think that's what's really needed in today's environment.
Well, you know, you hit a good point with the parents. One of the things we can do is role model. We can role model making mistakes and failing and not being perfect ourselves. And so often we go and we want to put on this face in front of our kids like, oh, everything's great, you know, and we don't share our bad days with them. We don't share that we made a mistake and talk them through it, how we managed it. And so I actually have recently instilled this with my husband that we have over dinner conversation. We talk about our good days and our bad days and mistakes that we made. And sometimes we handle them well and sometimes we don't. And the kids get to see that as a result. Yes.
I think that's a great piece of advice, is actually role modeling, especially for girls, the honesty and being and disclosing when things go well and things don't go well. I know I went through this specifically with my son because he was like, well, Mom, you're so successful and Dad's so successful. And, you know, how did you get that way? And I said, well, what you don't remember, honey, is you don't remember the times when we had so little money that I was literally taking money out of the piggy bank to go buy milk and hamburgers so I could make something for dinner. I mean,
mm-hmm.
because he never saw that side of things. And my daughter was the same way. They always thought, you know, they always had Christmas. We didn't have Christmas for a long time because we couldn't afford to buy the Christmas gifts for mm-hmm. the kids and ourselves. So we just did everything for the kids. And so I really love that idea of being able to be disclosing
right.
about the good and the bad.
Yeah, and showing our vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
You know, and sharing our strengths and our weaknesses, too, to say that
yeah.
we can't do everything. You know, I look at the pressures we have on kids today to be perfect at everything, like you were saying. They have
yeah.
to be on the teams and be, you know, star students. And I talk to a lot of women. They say, oh, you know, I don't know how to cook. My husband's a good cook. He does the cooking. Right? I know you're a good cook.
Yay!
Yeah, right? I know, me too. But, you know, a girl says, oh, I don't do math. Parents don't say, oh, okay. They say, we're going to get you a tutor. Right?
Let's give you more work.
Yes.
More work.
So you can get that A. And I'm just like, wow, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to not be good at everything, to find your strengths. That's part of what growing up is all about, is to figure out where you excel and where your passion is. And, you know, some areas where you don't, that you
yeah.
might want to, you know, do something else instead.
So how could parents help girls, or even boys, but girls, find their strengths?
Oh, let them try things. Okay, so that's letting them try things and letting them fail at them, right? We don't want to. So often we want to say, oh, no, you can only do things that we know you're going to succeed at. And if we don't know that, we're going to make it happen by getting the right people involved to outsource some help here.
Right, you'll get a tutor. You'll get
yeah.
a if they're not good at tennis, we'll get you
a
tennis coach, right?
Yes.
Which
yes.
is more time, more stress. Hello.
Right. Right, but letting them try different things and saying, you know what, I really didn't like tennis. Or you know what, I'm just really not that good at tennis. You know, soccer is more my thing. You know, I can kick a ball, but I can't use a racket. Now, I'm saying this personally because I'm not good at tennis. You know, but it's okay. And to find that and not feel like it's an existential, you know, failure at one sport or one class, to say, okay, you know what, now, that's good feedback.
Yeah, and you need that. Kids today need that resiliency to be able to survive in today's work mm-hmm. environment and even in the social environment, because mm-hmm. there's so much social media now. The pressure is so high on kids and girls specifically. I mean, they're not just now getting face things done like nose jobs and getting certain parts of their bodies augmented, but they're doing things like actually getting thigh surgery to create that little thigh gap that all the skinny models and girls have. So the pressure is incredible. So how do you help parents deal, and girls, because you're talking with young kids as well,
mm-hmm.
how do you help them kind of get over that, I need to have the perfect body syndrome?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's, well, finding your authentic self, I think, is part of it, and finding out who you are and what makes you happy, rather than to figure out, you know, how you can fit this mold of what other people are doing. And, you know, that takes courage, because it's much easier to just go and do what everyone else is doing. But to actually stand up and say, no, that's not for me. This is who I am. And I think that's where parents can help be supportive in that.
Yeah.
And help them really understand who they are and what they want to do. And that's, I said, getting some of those vulnerabilities out there and realizing that some people aren't going to accept you that way. Because it's okay not to have everyone like you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's good to have some people like you and have good friends and a support group, but if you really are going to be who you are, you're going to resonate more with some people than others.
Exactly. Exactly. And as I was thinking about as we were talking is that perfectionism that little girls are sort of raised around in some mm-hmm. cases because what they see on the media and TV mm-hmm. and they see all these things and they've got to be that perfect person. As women grow older, that perfectionism does turn into that imposter syndrome mm-hmm. or even limits women's ability to climb the corporate ladder, because research actually shows that if a job posting or a job situation is up and there's maybe 10 skills required for that job, in many cases the woman will have maybe 8 or 9 of those 10 skills and she won't apply.
Right.
Statistically, this is actually proven mm-hmm. because she doesn't think she's good enough or qualified enough, so she doesn't even apply. The man, on the other hand, could have 2 or 3 mm-hmm. of those skills. They go for it and get that job. And so, you know, thinking about yourself and your career, but also the girls around there, about how do they realize that they're not good at everything, and it's okay to focus on what you're good at.
Yeah, and to be able to advocate for yourself. I think that's another yeah. skill gap there for men and women, and also for young and old people, too.
Yeah.
Because younger people aren't learning that skill to get out there and advocate because their parents are doing it for them. And so I'm seeing this increasingly with young girls. You're talking about how to build resilience and how to deal with these ups and downs, and part of it is just getting out there and being able to say yes or no, or I want this, I don't want this.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. and not forcing it. I had one rule with my kids was that if they started something, like say, for example, they started soccer or football or softball, mm-hmm. that they had to just, that they needed to finish the season.
Right.
And if they decided after that season that they didn't like it, or play as long as you're finding joy and happiness in it, but if you're deciding that it's just not for me, and it's okay to mm-hmm. say, I'm going to focus on something else.
Right. I've had to do this with my daughter sometimes, is have her tell the coach or the teacher or whatever that she's not going to make a deadline or do something that she had promised to do. And, oh, that is so hard. I mean, it's so hard for us to do as adults, right? Like,
right.
oh, I messed up. But she's gaining those skills now to be able to do it and say, I'm not going to be able to do this. How can we work around this, you know, and get some help? And let me tell you, when you're thought to be perfect all the time, having to go back and admit, oh, whoops, I messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's going to help them so much in life. Because like you said, if the helicopter parents, if they're doing everything for the kid,
mm-hmm.
they don't have those skills. And by you having your daughter go talk to the coach and saying, you know what, or the teacher, you know, here's what happened. She's developing those skills to be able to use those when she gets into work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the idea. She doesn't always like it. She's like, you know, it's hard to be the daughter of somebody out there doing this. She goes, can't you helicopter me just a little, Mom?
I remember my son got older having conversations, and he'd go like, Mom, I don't work for you. When something happened, well, tell me what happened and how did you feel? And what he goes, Mom, I don't work for you.
Yeah, you know, I see a lot of parents putting their kids into these positions of being sort of projects to manage and thinking they can get
wow.
more performance out of them, right? I mean, we take these skills from work and we say, okay, if we need to increase profitability or performance, now we put it in our kids. And, you know, they're not always made that way. I mean, the analogy here is like a car, right? You buy some, I just take a name out of a hat, like a Toyota sedan, right? You're not going to expect it to drive like a Ferrari, and you're not, right? And you're not going to go to your mechanic and say, okay, tune it up once a week so I can get 120 miles an hour out of it on a normal basis, right?
Right.
But that's what we're doing to kids.
That's
right?
A great analogy.
Yeah, we're saying you have to be performing like sports cars, but maybe, you know, that's not a natural thing.
Maybe they're a Volkswagen.
Right. And that's great. We love them, right?
Yeah.
And, so letting them, you know, actually perform at the level. I mean, because then another thing is we're talking about the anxiety.
Yeah.
We put them in at this performance, high performance. And, you know, just for us, too, like when we're performing at our maximum all the time, one little thing is going to push us over the edge.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to be able to back off And, you know, studies show that's what leads to burnout.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
right now we're seeing the quarter life crisis, in fact, which is people at 25 burning out.
Yeah.
Especially women.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the way Joni and I met was actually because I'm going to be doing a Sue Talk in December for Connected Women of Influence. And she's been one of my coaches trying to get my 15, 20 minute presentation down to 12 minutes. And my whole presentation is about failing forward with vision, about how to and how that happened to me. I got caught up in that cycle, and I did go from a rock star to rock bottom. Literally, it felt like overnight because I had so much pressure on me and because I was trying to overperform on everything. And so we're going to take a quick commercial break, but I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of you. And again, this is her book, Flying Without a Helicopter, How to Prepare Young People for Work and Life. And how do we get in touch with you? And please spell your name so we get it right.
Okay. It's Joni, J-O-A-N-I-E, Connell, C-O-N-N-E-L-L. And the website is flexiblework solutions.com.
So flexiblework solutions with an S.
Yes.
.com.
Right. That's the best way to reach me.
Okay, great. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to continue talking about how to raise brave girls and how to raise brave children. So thanks.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.thetoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to Patty and her guest.
So this is Patty, and I'm here with Dr. Joni Connell, and we're having an incredible conversation about how to raise brave girls who are resilient and how to prepare them for work and life. She's the author of Flying Without a Helicopter, How to Prepare Your Young People for Work and Life, and I'm sure we can find that on Amazon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So we're having a great conversation. I think it's very important for parents and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles that have young children in your life about how do we really raise brave children that are prepared for the workplace. And so what about all this thing about bullies and mean girls? And the social media is so scary for me for young kids because everything is out there and there's no filters.
Right. Oh, that's a whole conversation.
That could be a whole show.
Yes. I mean, it just makes my heart sink as you say it. Because, first of all, it's a bigger issue than just individuals. This is a societal issue that we need to think about, how people are in our society promoting this kind of behavior of being perfectionists online and also bullying people online and all. But as an individual, how do you manage to get through this, right? I mean, first of all, a lot of people are saying just turn off the phones, right?
Yeah.
Turn off the media. Don't pay attention to it so much. There's a big movement for that for kids. But the other thing is just, like I said before, finding your authentic self, knowing who you are and being comfortable with that rather than feeling like it has to be something to show everyone else in this perfect world on social media. Now, with the mean girls and the bullying, that's the skills for standing up for yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And advocating for yourself and having those times to practice. I mean, I also give people the advice of martial arts, especially for girls.
I mean, especially today.
Yes. I mean, I'm actually a black belt in karate.
Oh, awesome.
Yes, my daughter's a brown belt, and I feel comfortable letting her go off and defend herself. And part of the way of learning this isn't to go out and fight. It's learning how to not fight and learning
right.
how to let the punches sort of figuratively, you know, graze you, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Right? To take some of this and not be devastated by it.
I saw an interesting thing on somebody posted on Facebook, and I think actually my husband posted it, and then I watched it. It was a guy talking about bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of what we're seeing right now in the news about sexual harassment and the things that, and bullying in many cases, mm-hmm. Is usually never about sex or the act itself. It's about bullying somebody and having power control over
right.
them. And he was giving some techniques that if somebody comes up to you and says, come on, you're stupid or you're dumb or whatever, you're mm-hmm. a dumb blonde. I'll use that one
mm-hmm.
because that. I used to have blonde hair, so that's been used against me a couple of times, you know. And he would, and how to overcome that? What could you say and say, you know? How do you come back? And almost maybe a karate approach, but more of an Aikido approach,
mm-hmm.
where Aikido is about meeting power with power, and you
right.
just diffuse that power by not allowing that to bother you,
mm-hmm.
and either walk away or say something, or find a way to defend yourself verbally or with karate yourself
mm-hmm.
if you're actually in a danger situation.
Right, yeah. I'm not necessarily saying people should go out and throw punches at each other. I mean, sometimes you might need to, but
right.
I think that, like you talk about the power, you have the power of how you react to a situation.
That's it.
Right. And so somebody can say whatever they want to you, and you have the power for your response. And that's, I think, empowerment is huge. Because when you're feeling powerless, that's when victims, you know, because
mm-hmm.
we don't have the power. But if we have the power to actually, you know, walk away or talk back or fight back and realize that it's up to us to understand that we can do something rather than that we're powerless,
yeah.
that'll help.
Yeah, that helps a lot. And I know that... with all the things that are going on in the news, and it was funny because I've worked in corporate world for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was in banking for a long time where I was one of few women VPs. I worked at Microsoft for 15 years where I was obviously one of the few women. And one of the benefits in being in engineering and technology is that when you have a big event, there's not a bathroom line. There's a line
right.
for the men's room, but there's no line. But that's one advantage. But it wasn't until recently that I really read an article called "Why Is Silicon Valley So Awful to Women?" That
right.
was in Fortune, or I think it was
I've
in Forbes.
It.
And I read the article and these stories about these women, and the aha for me was that I realized how often I had been either objectified or sexually
mm-hmm.
harassed. And because of who I am, I would joke it off, or I would make
mm-hmm.
some comment, or I'd walk away. But somehow in my mind, I sort of had put that in the back of my head. And all of a sudden, I went, wow, that probably was sexual harassment or something that I should have reported,
right. mm-hmm.
but didn't at the time. Because I thought, well, why bother? Who would believe me?
Right. And I think that women are being more empowered today to do this. There's
yeah.
been some movement out there to hold people accountable. Right. So that's a positive step that we can do. And, you know, we talk about our individual selves and realizing that we're not out there alone in this world. We have support from each other
yeah.
and friends. And I say this to girls and women all the time. It's like, and men and boys, too. When you see something like that happening, you're a part of the problem if you're not trying to fix it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah,
and doing something about it to really have an impact
mm-hmm.
and make a difference in that case. I think that's really important.
Right.
What was interesting is this week, obviously, if people have seen it, Ashley Judd was
mm-hmm.
on Good Morning America yesterday talking about her situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on Twitter. And so I was reading kind of the tweets that were going on, this whole Me Too campaign.
Right.
I mean, I think they've come out and said literally probably up to 70% of women have had some sort of sexual harassment
mm-hmm.
objectification in their career. 70%, not 7, 70. And a lot of us just didn't say anything at the time. But, you know, she came out and said some very brave things that happened. And I was reading Twitter, and partway through there was a Twitter from probably a guy that said, hey, sweetheart, get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not that good of an actress.
Right.
And I was like, talk about a mean tweet.
Right.
And just being able to say, how do we help girls build resiliency over that social media tweet
mm-hmm.
negativity that's happening?
Well, role modeling, again, is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one time, you know, I was chairing a dissertation review process, and we were in the final meeting, and a man was bringing up some derogatory comments about women
to the woman who was trying to defend her dissertation. And I'll never forget, I was the chair. First, I was trying to let her advocate for herself, and then realizing that I'm still a leader in this room.
I'm still participating.
Yeah. So it was up to me to do something. So I shut it down at the time, you know, and said that we needed to move on and talk about something else. But afterwards, I went in and polled everybody who had been in the room to see if they had felt uncomfortable about it. And then I gathered the information that I had received, because everyone did say, yeah, actually, but I didn't say anything. And then I delivered the feedback to him. And that was not a fun thing for me to do, trust me. But it felt necessary, not just for me, but also for everyone else in that room to know that something was being done.
Yeah, and the way of approach those situations is sometimes going to that individual and saying, you may not be aware
exactly.
of what happened,
mm-hmm.
but here's the feedback that came out consistently from a variety of mm-hmm. us that it was very uncomfortable. And
right.
here's specifically what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just say you were being offensive, he doesn't really know what he did.
Right.
And the goal is if you give feedback to somebody, you want them to stop a negative behavior
mm-hmm.
or repeat a positive one. So to be very specific about when you said this, this is how other people, including myself, took it.
That's really important what you just said, Patty, because
also,
you know, he didn't, I don't think he was malicious. He wasn't out there trying to do this. He didn't have the intention. We just talked about that raising kids, too. You have unintended consequences. And just becoming aware of the potentials of what you're doing and how it impacts others, I think, is really enlightening.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things to think about is that I've had this conversation with a number of people, including my publisher, about the idea that we have this thing that is kind of the rise of the bro culture, like the fraternity
mm-hmm.
bro culture. And I'm actually doing a Disrupt HR speech in a couple weeks on the invasion of the bro snatchers, which is a takeoff on the invasion of the body snatcher, that something's happening in corporate America where all of a sudden it's gone from innocent fist bumping,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of an evolution of the high five, to it's fist bumping, chest bumping, fierce competition, and I'll use the term ass slapping
mm-hmm.
kind of fraternity type environment, and how that's impacting women and minorities in some cases
wow.
who don't fit into that fraternity group
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, think about how do we prepare girls for, you know, those situations where they might be in an environment where things are basically inappropriate.
Wow, that's fantastic. I would love to see that.
Yeah. It's November 16th at UCI The Cove at 5:30. We've got about 20 speakers. We literally talk about a Sioux talk being hard where I have to get my presentation down to 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This one, it's 20 slides, 5 seconds of slides, 5 minutes to tell a story about how this is impacting.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I have is some pictures of some logos saying,
mm-hmm.
what you don't want is to see your company and your CEO on the news for the wrong reason.
Exactly.
For being fired for sexual mm-hmm. harassment or being fired for a workplace that's the bro culture. So anyway, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So how do we then prepare our girls for college? Because when they're
mm-hmm.
young and they go away to college, maybe they go to another town and they're now
mm-hmm.
in Arizona or Harvard
mm-hmm.
or someplace
mm-hmm.
at school. How do we prepare our girls for college?
Well, I think there are a couple things here. First is making sure that they're at the right fit. Right. If we've tried to have them, like I said, perform at this high level with tutors and coaches and everyone helping them out, and then we dump them off and somewhere to do it on their own, that's going to be anxiety provoking.
And,
right?
and like at college, nobody takes a role if you're there or not.
Right.
Nobody cares if you got an F or a D on a paper. They just got to hand it to you.
Right. And so you have to be accountable to yourself there. Right. So learning some of those skills. But, you know, some of the life skills, too. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know send their kids off to college, boys and girls. Trust me, it's not just girls on this one.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't even know how to do their own laundry, right? And I am not kidding. Basic stuff like that, basic things for life. I mean, we're already having enough stress being in college, trying to get the grades and learn this new level of academic performance, let alone the rest of life. How do I take care of myself, you know, and not doing it for them? I mean, I have one parent who told me that her daughter called her up the first week and said, Mom, you didn't send me money for the washing machine. And she goes, well, yeah, you have a bank account. She goes, no, it takes quarters. Send me quarters.
I'm sorry. That is classic.
Yes, it is. But this is what's happening. Like, increasingly, I mean, we've always had some people, you know, who had some privilege, who haven't been able to have to do these kinds of things on their own. But it's just exploding in the numbers and giving them some life skills to be able to take care of themselves.
I saw something where they even gave kids a phone, rotodial phone, where they didn't know how to dial. Oh, Mom,
right.
Where are the buttons?
You're right.
Yeah. So, you know, but believe me, I'm not the perfect parent, and my parents weren't the perfect parents either. I mean, but, you
right.
know, they did the best they could with what they knew. And
mm-hmm.
so we taught both of our kids from a very early age to cook on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So at 4 or 5 years old, if we're cooking breakfast, they're in there cooking breakfast with us.
Mm-hmm.
We did it with our granddaughter as
mm-hmm.
well. We taught her how to cook scrambled eggs. We did the same with our grandson. And so, you know, teaching them some life skills. And because my son learned to cook at an early age, here's a couple things that happened. One, when he got to college, he was very popular.
Oh!
Because he could do more than just boil water and make
mm-hmm.
hamburger helper. He could cook spaghetti and chicken
mm-hmm.
Alfredo and make Caesar salad. And one homecoming, instead of going out to a fancy restaurant, he actually had his girlfriend come to the house, and he cooked
nice.
An entire dinner for her and put her name out in rose petals
mm-hmm.
and did all this beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so really kind of cool. But, you know, and how to do laundry, how to sort laundry. And let them make a mistake. Let them put reds
right.
in with in their white underwear, and their underwear comes out pink, and say, you think you need to separate your laundry? So those life lessons are so important.
Yes, absolutely. And we're talking life lessons just in terms of these skills to take care of yourself. But that's also what I was talking about, the advocacy and being able to talk to people. I think communication skills are huge right now as a challenge for younger people, in part because of everyone talking on their phones.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
They're like this.
Right, and they're not as comfortable with a face-to-face now. But, you know, when something does come up, like a challenge with a professor, they didn't understand something, go to office hours, you know.
Yeah, go to meet with a professor and say,
right.
I just didn't understand what you said, you
mm-hmm.
know, in the class today.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have a few minutes?
Right, having roommates in college dorms. Right, you're not getting along. One person's messy, one person's neat. How
yeah.
do you work around that? You know,
yeah.
get through it with somebody and have it in a, like you were talking about, giving feedback in a constructive way rather than just blowing up at each other, right? So these are kind of skills that people need to have. They're not taught at school in English class and math class. You know, you were taught how to pass a test there.
Yeah.
We need some of these other skills too.
Yeah, I've got a woman coming on the show in a month or so. This has a company called Vital Link, and it's the link between schools and corporations. And
mm-hmm.
what she's trying to do is get schools to teach the life skills, how to
yes.
balance a checkbook, how to basic cooking
mm-hmm.
skills, but also those communication skills. Because what do you do when you have a conflict with your roommate? Like you
mm-hmm.
said, you
mm-hmm.
can't call mom and son. Can you fly back to Harvard and come talk to my roommate?
People do. I'm seeing it increasingly. You're right. The parents call the deans, and I mean, really, what's that teaching the kids? I mean, it's definitely the deans aren't happy.
No, it's like, your mom called me, really?
Yes, and then they end up doing it in the office, too. Once they have jobs, they'll call up the managers.
Right.
I mean, I have so many stories about people in the workplace with their parents still getting involved. And how are they going to get along, and, you know, once the parents
yeah.
are no longer there?
So do you have a favorite story about how that happened, where the parents called the boss or the school?
Well, I've had, I have a story about the workplace with working with an HR person.
Right.
And she was saying how she was getting calls, and the parents would call in and give excuses why the son wasn't showing up for work. And she was really upset by this, saying, you know, I need to talk to the son, you know, because, he's the employee. You know, you don't work for me. And the mom kept saying, no, I'm the one talking for him. And the person, the HR, was saying, well, you know, I don't think legally I can actually have this conversation with you.
Yeah. This is confidentiality
right.
between me and your son.
Right. And so it put her in a really bad spot. So she was telling me about how uncomfortable it was for her and how she had to pretty much have an uncomfortable conversation with the mom and say, no, you need to hang up the phone and let your son call in. And, of course, you know, it wasn't very happy, but it empowered the son to be able to call up and explain what was going on.
Yeah. So how do we prepare young people, girls or boys, for work? Because I have a lot of conversation with baby boomer friends and even some ex-gen friends that say, oh, my gosh, these millennials are coming into the workforce. They're more than 50% of the workforce people, so they are here.
Right.
And everything our parents complained about us is what some of my friends are saying about millennials. So
mm-hmm.
how do we prepare millennials for the workplace? And then how do we prepare the other generations to accept
mm-hmm.
or coach or help the millennials? That's
mm-hmm.
kind of two questions. So let's start
right.
with the first one.
Well, I think when we talk about the millennials, a lot of them are already in the workplace.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, you know, how are we working with them? And, you know, I work with managers some on how to get the younger workers to have some of those skills and the resiliency. And there are two things that I talk to them about is coaching. Now, this is true for parenting, too. It's just coaching rather than doing it for them, right? So coaching is stepping back, letting a person try to figure out how they want to solve a problem, and giving them some feedback and guidance along the way, and letting them work through it and then come back to you and check in rather than going off and say, okay, I'll just take care of this for you. And managers sometimes, you know, you have young people who come in, they say, I don't know how to do something. You know, I don't know how to put together this PowerPoint, and they send it off, and it has typos all through it, and the manager's like, oh, it's just easier for me to correct
it. Fix it myself.
Yeah. But no, giving it back and saying, you know, you need to work on this. And then if the person doesn't really know what the expectations are, that's a learning opportunity to have them come in and say, okay, you know, how are you going to figure out how to do this, and what are the expectations? When do we need to have a check-in? And learn the process so they can make their decisions on their own. But, you know, as I said, a lot of the millennials are already in the workplace.
Oh, they are.
It comes to the rest of us to how do we adapt to them, too. It's not just about them adapting to our ways.
Yeah.
You know, how do we adapt to their ways? There has to be a meeting of the minds.
Yeah. How do we look at what they bring to the workplace and all the the ability to do things in a quicker manner and things like that? But and then balancing that, because like if they've been raised as with helicopter parents, that's kind of the term that's out there, they know how to do exactly what they were told to do, but because they've been protected, you know, with everything, you ask them to do A, B, and C, and they do A, B, and C, but they don't know how to do D, E, and F all the way out to Z. And part of it is how you coach or debrief situations. So my husband, was a high school football coach for many years, and a lot of times we had parents come to us or come to him of saying, can you coach my kid because they're not doing well in school?
Ooh, interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, from the time the kids were 7 years old all the way to high school, we'd have people come to him, and he had a particular saying. It was decisions, accountability, and consequences. And so he talked to the kids about, well, what happened? What decision did you make? What are the consequences of what you did, and now you're accountable for the result? And so coaching kids by saying, well, what happened in that situation? Well,
that's exactly pretty much the model that I use, too, when I coach people and I teach people about that, is the decision-making process is what the kids need to learn. And, right, what are the potential consequences and the risks? When they're raised to be these perfectionists, they're not thinking about the risks or being able to take some calculated risks, right? We don't want to take reckless risks,
right?
But we want to understand, you know, what maybe it's okay to fail in this area, but not in this other area. So being able to factor the risks in and the consequences, if we do make a mistake, is it going to, you know, lose our job, or are we just going to end up having to work the weekend, you know, or something like that?
Yeah, or like, you know, kids tend to procrastinate on getting their school projects done, and they come to you at 10 o'clock at night and say, oh, I've got this craft project due tomorrow. Can we go to the 24-hour store and pick up supplies? And they're like, well, yeah, but you still got to get the project done, versus doing it for them or writing a note to the teacher saying, oh, we weren't able to get the supplies, so therefore, my son didn't or daughter didn't complete the project. So,
yeah, I have one university professor who talked to me about a student of hers. She's in graduate school, and she wasn't able to write papers, and the papers she turned in were just really terrible. And she said, what's going on here? You know, how did you not learn how to write in college? And she goes, well, my mom wrote all my papers for me in college.
Oh!
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we are maybe best intention there to help her through.
Good intentions.
Yet, disempowering her in the process. So then she ends up failing later in the next step, right?
Yeah. When it really counts and somebody's not there to help you.
Right.
So how do we help children find careers they love?
Oh, let them try things. Let them try and find out what they like and what they don't like, what they're good at and what they're not good at. And that's the key part there, is to give them honest feedback. Right? I mean, when we have trophies for everything, right?
No, seriously. Do not get me started.
I know. And I am not kidding. I can tell you story after story about that. You know, the kids aren't getting honest feedback, right?
Yeah.
We need to know, and we need not only just to build resiliency, like, okay, you know, I didn't succeed at this time, or the team, you know, lost to this other team, but, you know, maybe I'm not as good at this, and I should pick a different area to go into.
Yeah.
And so I find a lot of people, when they get older, they haven't gotten that honest feedback. And this is a problem in the workplace. Talk about feedback.
Yeah.
People just being completely crushed by honest feedback at that point because they've never had it before. And literally falling apart, crying in the manager's office,
yeah.
Leaving the job because they don't feel like they're being supported because somebody gave them some honest feedback. And so how do you find jobs that you love or careers that you love is learning where is a good fit for you and finding out what works and what doesn't work for you along the way.
Yeah, sometimes I help people figure out what their strengths are, the whole mm-hmm. idea that you play to your strengths, because mm-hmm. if you just focus on your weaknesses, you're only maybe going to get average at best,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you focus on your strengths, how much you can be more powerful. So I tell
right.
people, take a piece of a pad of paper or a note journal, and every day or write down, if you're doing something, does it make you feel stronger?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself energized when you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself doing it when nobody's watching?
Right.
Do you find yourself feeling better and like you're in your peak performance zone? That's probably your strengths. And nobody is good at everything. I don't care who you are. You're not good at everything. You're going to have something you're not as
mm-hmm.
profound at. So it's just being able to give that honest feedback. And I look at feedback as like a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there are bad managers out there that give horrible, terrible feedback.
Right.
And you probably worked for
mm-hmm.
several. I've worked for a couple. And some of that sometimes you just have to sit there and just listen and say, well, what's the truth behind it? But feedback helps you know when you're doing something you may not know that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It could be mm-hmm. as simple as that you sit in a meeting and you're always clicking your pen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and it's disturbing to people.
Right.
And say, do you realize that you're actually clicking your pen during the
mm-hmm.
meeting, like, you know, every 2 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
And it's disturbing for people. Can you just put the pen down?
Right.
Or what could you do? Well, I could put the pen down. So mm-hmm. you ask them the questions they can do.
Yeah, one of the tools I've developed recently is called a feedback tracker, which is essentially a guided journal entry. And it's learning to appreciate feedback, right? Because sometimes you get it and you just, you know, throw it off and say, or blame somebody else, right? It's so easy for us to say, oh, it's something else that happened. It was, you know, I didn't get enough sleep that day, or the test wasn't fair, or whatever it is, right? And taking the feedback and said, writing it down, and putting down your reaction to it.
Yeah.
So you can get that anger out. I didn't like this at all. But then what are the nuggets, or is the nugget you can take from it? And if you were to deliver that feedback to somebody else in the future, how would you deliver it? So figuring out a way to be more constructive and thinking
right.
of it that way, too. So that turning it into a positive event rather than something negative.
And if you have a journal, you can look for the themes.
Right.
So maybe boss number one told you
mm-hmm.
A particular piece of feedback,
mm-hmm.
and you go, okay, I got that. Yeah, thank you very much. And bosses were actually surprised when they would give me feedback, and I would say thank you.
Yeah.
They would, wait, you're not going to get defensive? I was like, well, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes walk away going, oh, you're so dum-dum. But in your head, but you never say that in
right.
the room. But actually thinking about, is there a trend? Is there something
mm-hmm.
in there? And is it simply a matter of that's not a strength for you, so you need to focus on something else?
Mm-hmm.
So we only have a couple of minutes left. So I would love to, one, know maybe what is your 2 or 3 words of advice for parents or girls on how to become strong, empowered women? And kick some glass.
Kick some glass. Well, I tell people this all the time. It's let them fail, right? I mean, we don't want to let people fail, but letting them fail, letting them face the consequences, and then building the strength to get through that, that's what will help them be better, successful people in the future. All of our top leaders have all failed multiple times. And like you say, fail forward.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's the ability for them to build resiliency. I think that is the most important thing that
right.
everybody needs in today's environment. Women, children, men, whoever happens to be, we all need to figure out how we build resiliency because
mm-hmm.
it's just such a harsh world right now.
It is.
Yeah.
Right. And being strong enough to get through that and bounce back and keep going.
Yeah.
That's what differentiates the people
yeah.
who succeed from the ones who don't.
Yeah, there's a quote that says it's not how far you fall that counts. It's how high you bounce back.
Right.
And that's what's really important. So
mm-hmm.
How do we get in touch with you? And one more time, her book, Flying Without a Helicopter. I think every parent should have this book, How to Prepare Young People for Work and Life. So you need to pick up this book. And so how do we get in touch with you? Again, spell your name because
Okay. It's Joanie, J-O-A-N-I-E, Connell, C-O-N-N-E-L-L. And the website is flexibleworksolutions.com.
Awesome.
Yes, you can find the book there, too.
Okay, great. Well, this has been a great show, and I've really enjoyed it. A couple things for the audience. If you happen to live in the Orange County, Inland Upper San Diego area, we're having an incredible event on November 2nd at UCI. It's the second annual Executive Next Practices Women's Forum. We have amazing women CEOs. We have one man on the panel. We'll have people from Catalyst, the leading researcher on women's leadership, and a professor from UCI talking about women on the boards. And so it's an incredible morning. It's from 8:30 to noon. If you want to find out more information, go to www.enpinstitute.com, and you can sign up for the event. It's going to be sold out soon, so it's an incredible event to learn about how to be a great empowered woman leader and some of the great things that Joanie shared with us today. You can find my book, Quiet Women Never Change History, Be Strong, Stand Up, Stand Out, with the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass, on Amazon. And I'm also looking for opportunities for speaking and presentations about how to be an empowered woman. And finally, we're looking for sponsors for the show. So if there's a company out there that'd like to sponsor the show, we give you some great airtime. And 93% of the people today listen to radio, and 50% of them listen to podcasts or pod radio shows like this. So you get reach an incredible audience. So with that, I want to say thank you to Joanie, and let's go kick some glass.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grim.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrim@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.